The serenity to accept my things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Just for today. I'm Jane B., your leader for this meeting, co-leading with Scott, my husband, with Virginia and Brant. And each of us will be speaking today about our journey with intimacy. But before we begin, we do welcome you. This is a couples meeting. I've introduced ourselves. We will be following the Essanon format, but you'll also hear an essay reading. We do welcome you to the Essanon family group and hope that it's in this fellowship that you will find the help and friendship we have been privileged to enjoy. We would like you to feel that we understand, as perhaps few can. We, too, were lonely and frustrated, but here we have found that there is no situation too difficult to be bettered and no unhappiness too great to be lessened. Essanon family groups consist of relatives and friends of sexaholics who realize that by banding together, they can solve their common problems. We urge you to try our program. Without spiritual help, living with or having lived with a sexaholic is too much for most of us. We become nervous, irritable, and unreasonable. Our thinking becomes confused and our perspective becomes distorted. Rarely have we seen a person who has not greatly benefited by working the Essanon program. The 12 steps of Essanon, which we try to follow, are not easy. At first, we may think that some of them are unnecessary, but if we are honest, open-minded, and willing to apply the principles of the 12 steps to our lives, we find that the benefits can be limitless, including God's gift of serenity. We'd like to begin today by going around the room. It's going to take a little bit, but if we could all just check in briefly with our names. And I am Jane, and I'm local here in Nashville, part of Monday night meeting.
Hi, Jane.
And we'll just stop. Since there is so many people, please bear with us. We'll just have Virginia introduce herself as well.
I'm Virginia.
Hi, Brant.
Okay, we have a couple of people that we've asked to come up and do some readings for us. Would Jennifer please come up and read the keys to the Essanon to Essanon recovery?
I'm Jennifer.
Jennifer.
Over time, Essanon members learn to accept a number of new ideas. Sexaholism is a disease very similar to alcoholism. At first, many of us could not accept this idea. For Essanon members, it means that we see sexaholics as sick people, not bad people. They are powerless over lust. The actions of the sexaholic are not a result of something we did or did not do. We do not have the power to control their behavior. Our attempts to ignore or control sexual addiction led to a decline in our emotional health and may have enabled the sexaholic to continue to practice his or her disease. When we first come to Essanon, we too are spiritually and emotionally ill. As we work toward full acceptance of these ideas, we begin to see our problems in a new light, and the awareness dawns that we do have choices concerning our own actions. This is the beginning of our recovery. We remind ourselves that we are powerless over the behavior caused by sexaholism. We ask a higher power to help us to stop blaming and trying to control the sexaholic. The sobriety of the sexaholic is not our responsibility. We realize we cannot find serenity for ourselves if we continue to focus on someone else's recovery. So we commit ourselves to our own recovery. With the loving help of other Essanon members and the God of our understanding, we take positive action to make our lives more serene and fulfilling. We attend as many meetings as we can, get a sponsor, if possible, and begin to apply the principles of the 12 steps to our lives. We use the telephone, the Essanon literature, and the Essanon slogans. Eventually, we reach out to help others and try to carry the message of our own recovery. We do these things in our own way, one day at a time, striving for progress, not perfection. This is what is meant by working the program.
Now we've asked Mitch to come up and read for us what is a sexaholic and what is sexual sobriety.
Hi, my name is Mitch, sexaholic from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Amen.
What is a sexaholic and what is sexual sobriety? We can only speak for ourselves. The specialized nature of Sexaholics Anonymous can best be understood in terms of what we call the sexaholic. The sexaholic has taken himself or herself out of the whole context of what is right or wrong. He or she has lost control, no longer has the power of choice, and is not free to stop. Lust has become an addiction. Our situation is like that of the alcoholic, who can no longer tolerate alcohol and must stop drinking altogether, but is hooked and cannot stop. So it is with the sexaholic, or sex drunk, who can no longer tolerate lust, but cannot stop. Thus, for the sexaholic, any form of sex with oneself or with partners other than the spouse is progressively addictive and destructive. We also see that lust is the driving force behind our sexual acting out, and true sobriety includes progressive victory over lust. These conclusions were forced upon us in the crucible of our experiences in recovery. We have no other options, but we have found that acceptance of these facts is the key to a happy and joyous freedom we could otherwise never know. This will and should discourage many inquirers who admit to sexual obsession or compulsion, but who simply want to control and enjoy it, much as the alcoholic would like to control and enjoy drinking. Until we had been driven to the point of despair, until we really wanted to stop but could not, we did not give ourselves to this program of recovery. Sexaholics Anonymous is for those who know they have no other option but to stop, and their own enlightened self-interest must tell them this.
Thank you, Mitch. I'd like to go over the meeting guidelines. Because our common welfare comes first, here are the guidelines for sharing during our meeting. This is a special meeting which deals specifically with couples' relationships. But our purpose in sharing is to discuss ourselves rather than our partners. If you wish to share, please wait to be recognized by the leaders as we do not crosstalk. That is, we share our experience with the group as a whole rather than addressing comments or questions to individual members, including our partners. If you wish to reply to a speaker, please do so after one-on-one, after the meeting. Please keep your shares to under 2 minutes to give as many people as possible a chance to come up and speak. We will end our meeting shortly before 11:30 so that we do have the opportunity to hear the gifts of the program. So we will be, Virginia will be signaling if you're here speaking there close to 11:25. She'll give you a signal to please wrap up so that we all do have the opportunity to hear the gifts. We leave our other identities outside the discussion, other 12-step issues, philosophies, religions, therapies, and occupations. Our meetings focus on the Essanon 12-step approach to recovery, so we avoid the mention or discussion of specific titles and authors of publications other than the Essanon conference-approved literature, which is Essanon SA, Al-Anon, and AA literature. We stress that the sharing be pertinent to relationships, and that if you wish to talk about your partner, he or she must be present. Each member is encouraged to remind other members during the meeting, if necessary, of our commitment to these guidelines. We are here to talk today about intimacy, and I'll kick that off. I have been in this program, I'll start by saying Scott and I have been married for 29 years, and we entered into recovery. Our crisis happened in 2003. And that was the gateway to recovery for us. The journey has been difficult, as I know that a lot of you know. It's been worth it. I would say that when we entered into recovery in 2003, at that time, our intimacy was based on our relationship with our church. That wasn't something that we always had in our marriage, and it was fairly new, and it was filling me. And I substituted, there are a lot of things I can substitute for intimacy. And when we entered into recovery, for me, it was our relationship with our church, and which made the crisis even more difficult to handle because I thought everything was in a really good place. Prior to that, I know that we gained a lot of intimacy with our children. In 2003, we still had a daughter living at home, an adult daughter. So we enter into recovery, and all the whirlwind that that brings following a crisis. And what we found is the thing I can say about intimacy to anyone who's entering into this is that be patient, because it doesn't happen easily and it doesn't happen quickly. I think the first 2 years for us, the first 2 years of recovery brought, there's so much to deal with. I didn't know what I was feeling. I knew what he was feeling, but not what I was feeling. And I spent my life focusing on other people. So for me to understand what I was feeling, and a lot of it is about knowing my needs, knowing what I wanted. So I think for that first 2 years, it's the separation process. It's the detachment for me, the detachment from him, to understand who I am. And thank goodness, sponsorship can't be talked about enough, because it's in that sponsee relationship that we learn intimacy. For me, it's how I learned intimacy. It's how I learned to trust another person with who I truly am. It's how I found myself. It's how I found the relationship that I have with my higher power. So first came the sponsor intimacy, which opened the door to my intimacy with God and my higher power. And it was through that intimacy that I learned to be intimate with myself, that I learned to know who I was. And only then could I really bring that into my marriage and develop intimacy in my marriage. And the hard part is that during that 2 years, we're trying to save our marriage. So we're trying to do intimacy, and we're trying to understand ourselves. We're trying to develop a relationship with higher power, working steps. So there's a lot of struggle in those first 2 years. Intimacy has come slowly, and it has come beautifully. I would say that just as working the program for me to stay sober in my Essanon program, it takes work. It takes daily conscious contact with my higher power. It takes conscious contact with people in the program, and it's only then that I can show up in relationship with my husband. And we have a commitment to each other. We have to work at it. It only works if you work it in the program, and intimacy only works when we work it. We have to show up every day with each other. We commit to checking in with each other every night with how we're feeling. We try to do that, spiritually, physically, emotionally. And for me, one of the pitfalls, there are some pitfalls. When I'm clean and sober, I can hear him. I can show up. I can speak my need. I can speak my boundary. I can speak my truth, and I can hear his truth. I know that I'm not sober and that I'm looking to him to be my higher power again when it's not enough. What he's telling me isn't quite enough, and I realize that I'm seeking my peace through how he is. And that is I spent my 40-some-odd years prior to entering into recovery looking for other people to give me that peace and not my higher power. So today, even, that I don't think that will ever end. That's an indicator to me. If I constantly am searching for him, I'm not hearing exactly what I need to hear. And I'm, well, how are you feeling about this and this and this? And I realize I'm not just trying to talk with him. I'm trying to understand and gain peace that he's okay. And part of intimacy is entering in together to have the trust to enter in and say truly where we are. Together, I can say where I am, whether it's angry, sad, hurt, whatever the feeling is, and he can do the same. We can hear each other. I can allow him to be angry. I can allow him to be processing something, and therefore he's inside of himself. I don't have to know that he's called a sponsor, but I only have that. That's not me. That's a gift of working my program. And it's worth it, and it does take daily attention because life happens. And how am I doing on time? Okay. But I'll stop now and let the others speak. But that's the message of hope, is that it is worth it and it is possible if you start with yourself and your relationship with your higher power and bring that in. Thank you.
I'm Scott. I'm a sex and lust addict. I'm at least third generation SA, and my mother was an alcoholic. So amazingly, there was not a good example of what a couple is supposed to be like in my household. I don't know that I ever saw my parents hold hands. I don't think I ever saw my parents have a nice, soft talk to each other. I don't know that I ever saw my parents do anything that I think was a healthy example of what a couple should be. When the crisis hit 5.5 years ago for us, amazingly enough, it was not the first crisis. It was one of several in a row. And when I got into recovery, and I'm going to tell the story quickly as I can, my mother had gone through AA. My father had actually gotten into Al-Anon. And when the crisis happened, Jane wanted me to leave the house, and I thought I had so much fear about losing everything that I went to the couch instead and did not sleep for a week. And one morning, about 3 o'clock in the morning, God said, look up the phone number for SA. I never heard of Sexaholics Anonymous, and got up, looked up in the phone book, 3 o'clock in the morning, and there's a number for Sexaholics Anonymous in the phone book. So 6 o'clock in the morning, I made a phone call and found out about the 9 o'clock meeting and went to it, and suddenly had a lot of hope for who I am. Came home, told Jane about it, found out about Essanon, and was encouraging Jane to go to Essanon. Well, for the first month or so, Jane was working my program harder than I was. And I will never forget that when she went to her first Monday night meeting, she called me from the parking lot, and she was in tears, and I was in tears. And she was scared to go in, and I was scared she wouldn't go in. I've learned a lot about myself. That I'm a shame-based person, that fear and shame drive everything I do, think, feel. For me to be intimate with Jane, or quite honestly anybody else in the world, I've got to know where I am at any moment in time. And that's where I have to work my program. I have to know what's going on inside me. If I don't know what's going on inside me, I can't possibly be present for somebody else. Because if I don't know what's going on inside me, then I'm off in lust and fantasy. And that can take so many forms I couldn't possibly list it in the time that we have. To show up and be real with Jane, there are two relationships that I have the most fear around. Jane and my boss. Okay? Because I fear losing those two relationships the most. Because if I lose my relationship with my boss, I'm going to be fired. And my reputation will spread around this town. And I'll never find another job. And I'll be broke. And I'll be under the bridge. And that happens like within 2 days. Okay? The fear of being in an honest relationship with Jane is one day she is going to wake up and say, I'm married to a piece of crap human being. And I'm going to leave him. And that's my fear. That's my fear of showing up honestly with Jane, that I'm scared. It's my fear of showing up honestly with Jane, that this is where I truly am, is because I'm scared. I have fear. She's going to kick me out. That's the fear. That's my truth. I can be honest as hell in a meeting, in a 12-step meeting. I can say anything in the world with a bunch of other SA people, and they all go. And then when they're sharing, I go. And I'm safe. Because those people can leave my life. And quite honestly, I don't care. Jane leaves my life. And a lot of me is destroyed. Not everything. But my truth, my fear inside me, is that I want this relationship with Jane more than any other person on this planet. And because I want that the most, I fear it the most. And so intimacy is hardest with Jane. It's hardest to show up and be honest with her. And these daily check-ins that we do, a lot of times when that happens, sometimes that's the first time of the day I've thought about where I am. You know? I sponsor people. I have a sponsor. I check in pretty much daily with a sponsor.
You're being cut off.
Bye.
I'm Virginia. And I'm a local Essanon. Brant and I have been married for 17 years. And in this journey, I've come to learn that one of the short definitions for intimacy is into me, see. And for me, that was not difficult with women, but extremely difficult with men. So that's part of my background, emotionally shut down in that way. But had a lot of hope and, you know, married a great guy. So, which is true. But probably I came in with a lot of baggage that I had no clue about. So I just thought intimacy was one of those things that happened. If you kind of think the same way, believe the same way, work hard at it, you'll get it. What I didn't know is that I didn't have a voice. I didn't know a lot about myself. And I could not communicate that to a man especially. So in that, I was just learning how to do a relationship, really, when we got married. And what I know now is that we were very enmeshed, and when he would do things, I would take it extremely personally, but I couldn't separate myself, like the way he drove, the way this, that, and the other. And I was a lot of fear, you know, a lot of fear because of, you know, relationships with men in the past. So did not know this, but I was keeping all this stuff inside. So what it was doing is building a lot of resentment in me because I could not communicate how I was really feeling because I didn't know. So, you know, a lot of our first years of marriage, we really acted like roommates and sometimes not very good roommates. You know, we would go, I mean, honestly, weeks without talking except just bare minimum that we need to get by. So there was a lot of almost, you know, looking one way on the outside, but in our home this way. And I had a lot of conflict about that inside. Just this isn't the way it's supposed to be. This is not real. That we were, you know, I was managing an image, but it wasn't really reality. And so I wasn't, you know, wasn't living on the outside what was going on the inside. One day, you know, after in a lot of struggle, you know, kind of bottoming out, Brant told me that he was a sexaholic. And my response was, "You're a what?" I just didn't know a lot about what that meant, didn't understand that some of the stuff happening in our marriage was being driven by that. My response, denial, you know, just it's your problem, not mine. Gratefully, Brant ran into recovery quickly, seriously, and so we were in counseling. Essanon was suggested to me, but just didn't want to go. But what happened was I began to see what recovery was doing in his life, even though we were at a bad place. Just the little glimmers were really inviting to me, so I decided to go to Essanon. And because that place is a real and open and honest place, I just listened. It took me a long time to ever share in a meeting. So here, this is me. This is, if I'm going to let someone see into me, I began to understand that I wasn't going to Essanon because of I had an SA for a spouse, but I needed it for me. That was a real breakthrough for me to begin to separate and to own my own recovery. And that's probably, for me, one of the ways that I could, of course, know myself, know my higher power in new and deeper ways, and begin to find a voice so that I could actually have a whole person to a whole person relationship. I love the Serenity Prayer. It carried me. It carries me a long way. The tools, learning how to work tools, and having those tools to then bring in. and to a marriage relationship. And probably for me with intimacy is that just having connection with God and then having, like it's been mentioned, a sponsor, other people to talk to, that I could take a lot of my crap to somebody else and get a lot of the emotion diffused, because when I started feeling, I was feeling. And then when I would relate to Brent, it would be in a different way, much healthier, much more, bottom line, instead of bringing him all this crazy chaos. So it's one part about recovery and having intimacy in recovery that has helped to have somebody else to have this. So the thing, the other thing is just through my recovery and living, having the privilege of living with someone who was working a great program, for each to experience the gifts in our own individual recovery for years, then we could start coming and working on our coupleship. Hard, but worth it. So I appreciate being here. Thanks.
Thanks for joining.
I'm Brian. I'm a sexaholic.
Hi, Brian.
From Franklin. And intimacy for me, I didn't know anything about intimacy growing up, and I started therapy when I was right out of college. And really, I would say even until I got in recovery is when I really started learning about intimacy. And it started in the SA rooms, because a lot of my acting out is very shame-based, and I have a lot of shame about. And it was the first time in my life that I ever felt loved and accepted and free, because I had been a total image manager all of my life. And so for me to learn to be intimate with Virginia, it was all about me taking care of myself, me getting in recovery, me working a program that would enable me to get healthy so I could move toward her in an intimate way. And so the great thing is that she did get an S&on, because I know a lot of guys in the program, probably I would say the majority of the people I know in the program, their spouses aren't in S&on and are unwilling. They think that the guy's the whole problem. And I can understand why the spouses think that, but it is not only one person. And so I was really grateful when she got an S&on and got very involved. But that didn't mean we had a great marriage and that everything was rosy by any means. And what has carried me through and has helped me be intimate is this book right here, the big book. And what I wear out more than anything else is this chapter, depending on your edition of the big book, 449 on acceptance, and that whole passage that the doctor who wrote was talking a lot of it in the context of his marriage. But that classic passage on acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I apply that to my marriage, that has helped me learn to accept Virginia, because one of my great character defects is that I am great at taking other people's inventory. I'm very judgmental. I'm very self-righteous. And I can, point out what you're doing wrong. And as much as we are alike and have a lot in common, which is what drew us together, we're also very, very different. And it's easy for me to point out the things that she's doing wrong, which aren't according to my standards. And acceptance has helped me learn to accept her for who she is, that she doesn't have to be just like me. That the way I do things and the way I want stuff done doesn't mean that that's the best only way. And the more I can apply these principles, as a 12-step says, to all of my affairs, to my marriage, that helps me be intimate with her. Another part from this passage that the doctor says is that the more I focused on her defects, the more they grew and multiplied. I have to read that over and over, because that's what I do, is I focus on her defects, and that's a complete intimacy killer. The more I focus on her defects, how can I be intimate toward her because I'm being critical? The other thing is resentments. That's another complete intimacy killer. And for all my friends out there in the Franklin and Nashville area, they know that I'm a person that can be resentful about anything, about marriage, about work, about whatever. And they're killers for serenity, but certainly for intimacy. And so I can't afford to have resentments harbor up or all this character defect focusing on. And I love the part also on the top of 451 where he says, The courage to change in the serenity prayer meant that not that I should change my marriage, but rather that I should change myself and learn to accept my spouse as she was. And then at the bottom of that section, he says, Max and I try to communicate what we feel rather than what we think. We can't argue about our feelings. When we deal in feelings, we tend to come to know ourselves and each other much better. Well, Virginia and I are both very opinionated people. We're both very independent people. And it's easy for us to argue. It's easy for us to have differing opinions and be very passionate about them. But if we are talking about our feelings, that's different. And that's a great thing that recovery and therapy has taught us, is learning to do the when you, I felt, instead of the shame and the blame and the pointing and you did this and why did you and I can't believe you and you hurt me and you made me, instead of saying, I feel hurt. I feel sad right now. I feel lonely. And when this happened, I felt this, you know, instead of you. And that's made a big difference for me and for us, too. Am I doing okay on time? Okay. The last thing is, at the last part of that passage, it talks about expectations, and that's another big killer of intimacy. I've heard, you know, in our meeting rooms, people say expectations are premeditated resentment. And the lower I can have of my expectations of Virginia, the better off our relationship and our intimacy is going to be. But if I'm thinking this is the way this has got to be, or this is the way I want this to happen, or if I'm hoping that she's going to do this, whether it's, you know, a relational thing, a parenting thing, a sexual thing, whatever it is, when I have those expectations, I'm setting myself up for disappointment. So I cannot thank. I said last night at the birthday meeting when I picked up my 7-year chip, I said this program is the most important thing in my life, because without it, I wouldn't have my life, and I wouldn't have my marriage, and I wouldn't have my kids, and I wouldn't be here. And who knows where I would be. I don't even want to think about that. But I'm just thankful for recovery and what it's done for us, and specifically what we're here talking about for our intimacy. Thanks.
The meeting is now open for sharing. We remind you that when one partner shares, the other partner has the option of sharing as well, or your partner can pass. But we do ask that if you wish to speak about your partner, that they be present. And we open it up for sharing.
Don't all go at once.
Well, someone has to break the ice. Intimacy has been a huge problem for me all of my life.
What's your name?
I'm sorry, I'm Neil. I'm a sexaholic. From New Jersey. I never wanted anybody to see into me. I tried very, very hard not to let anyone know me. And, of course, that was because I felt if they knew me, they would not accept me. In the rooms, they say they would go running and screaming away if they knew who I really was. And that's how I truly felt. And I was given with marriage to my wife, I was given everything that I wanted in life, but I didn't recognize it. Everything that I was looking for in life, my wife gave me. She gave me a home. She gave me a family. She gave me love. She gave me acceptance. I was so wrapped up in my fantasy world that never filled me. It never got inside of me. Until coming into this program, and coming into this program after many, many years of marriage. This is, we're going on our 43rd year of marriage, and and I'm in the program now for 3 years. So for 40 years of marriage, I never let myself experience what God and my wife had opened their arms and given me. Through the program, through recovery, I'm learning how to be intimate with my wife. It still is hard for me. It's hard for me to recognize feelings. It's hard for me to even know what I want out of life. I feel like I'm just a toddler getting into life after all of these years. And with that, I'll let Amy say if she wants.
Hi, I'm Amy. I always wanted emotional intimacy in my marriage, but I didn't know how to get it. But one thing in our recovery that we've been doing that has helped an awful lot, once a week we have a meeting of the two of us, and we sometimes share on what we've been reading or writing on that week, but not always. And even if we do, it's not everything, but it gives us a conversation about, you know, our programs. I was going to say something else, I forget. sometimes we ask questions of each other, but it's a connection that really has helped. And I can't praise the programs enough. It's really made our marriage what I thought it was and wasn't, and now it really is. Thank you.
I'm Chris. I'm a sexaholic.
Great.
From Franklin, Tennessee. 39 years of my life, I had no idea what intimacy was. I thought if anybody ever knew what was on the inside of me, just like was said before, that they would run and scream and hide. And I especially thought that if I ever told her who I was, she would be gone. I was a huge fear, as was shared earlier. I just couldn't bear to have her know. Well, it came crashing down, and I told her, and she didn't run, which was amazing. That's a God thing right there. But then came the process of trying to learn how to recover and separate myself from her and work on me and go to meetings and not tell her to go to Essanon, which was really hard because I'm like, you need to go. And I couldn't say a thing. And finally a therapist told her she had to go. I kind of I smiled inside that day. So I will admit that. But and I had to pay her $20 afterwards. But the thing that was hard after that, you know, after about 9 or 10 months, all of a sudden we you know, brought the separation back together. Now we have to talk to each other and learn how to say things with feelings, and I had to learn, and I'm still learning, to shut up and let my wife talk. If I really want intimacy, I need to not fix her problems. And I was really never good at fixing them, but I always tried to. And so she would, it just was very hard. And, you know, of course, money, sex, and raising our daughter. Wow, try to have a conversation and not try to fix each other on that. That's hard to do for us. And we're not doing it perfect. And we're both in recovery. And I've had to make phone calls. I've had to get in my car, drive around the block, call my sponsor, and have him hang up on me because I wasn't listening to him. But when I listened to him, and most of the time I had to go back and accept and listen to her and apologize for what I was not doing in the relationship. I had to own what I was doing, and that was hard for me to do. So I'm grateful to be here. It's been 2.5 years, and this program is a lifesaver for us. And I see who my wife is today, and I see my daughter. There's two things I didn't see when I was in my disease. Thanks.
Hi, my name's Alyssa. The one thing I want to make sure to say, well, I'm just
incredibly grateful that my higher power has brought us this far. I want to reiterate the idea of being patient, because none of it's easy, and it has been very worth it. And I think one of the most valuable things I have learned in recovery, after gaining the friendships of the people in the program, the notion of when I have a wellspring of emotion, to call one of them first. The idea of being able to talk it through with one or more people before I try to just dump it on my husband. Showing up at the height of emotion and dumping all my emotion and words on him actually did not help build intimacy at all. It really, really, really helped to call someone else and talk it through and really get down to some core issues of why am I feeling so much emotion about this. That really helped us communicate better, helped me show up better and communicate with him. Being able to get to the point was a really good thing. So thanks.
Thank you.
These are terrific discussions. Just a quick reminder that when you share, if you could just kind of keep in your peripheral, Virginia will raise the blue folder if you're going around 2 minutes, so we can give everyone an opportunity. Thank you.
I'm Ed. I'm a sexaholic.
Amen.
From Shelbyville, Kentucky. And, man, it's such a privilege to be in a marriage sober. I was married almost 26 years previously, have two sons, and sexaholism, my active lust addiction, played a major role in the destruction of that marriage. But that wasn't the only thing. We had no true intimacy. I didn't know how to be intimate. I didn't know who I was deep down where I live. And beyond that, I didn't know how to put words to how I felt. And one of the most powerful principles that I know has played a major role in my present marriage, which is approaching 2 years, is the ability to say, I feel, and I would like for you to hear what's going on in my world. I can share with you how I feel and then hear how you feel, and we both can learn something. Staying away from opinions that end up in arguments doesn't work. That passage in the big book that Dr. Paul wrote is powerful in the principles it has in it, and I have availed them for myself to be able to transmit what I've learned about me and what God has revealed to me in how He made me, so that I can share that with my partner. And because of being able to share and then in turn hear her response, I have a bigger experience than I ever imagined and dreamed. And I have a lot of hope about our marital future, and I can never be sufficiently grateful for what people in these rooms have given me as gifts, and also the skills to where I can pass on a little bit of that to my partner and be grateful.
Thank you.
I'm Kathy. I'm a sexaholic, also from Shelbyville, Kentucky. I primarily attend meetings in Louisville, Kentucky, and occasionally sometimes in Lexington. And I was married before for 19 years, and that marriage was a disaster, and a large part of that was with me, and I didn't know I was a sexaholic at the time. I also had a lot of non-issues I didn't know I had at the time, and that marriage was marked by addiction, abuse, adultery, domestic violence. We had it all. And after that marriage ended, and there was a period of time where I rededicated myself and my faith, and I made the discovery I was a sexaholic and entered recovery and became sober, but I still felt that I was damaged goods, and what good and godly man would accept me now with my past? And I am very grateful for the marriage I have now. Ed and I both met sober. We didn't meet in the rooms, and I never want our situation or relationship to be a stumbling block to anyone, so I always mention that. Because I always thought, how am I going to bring up this topic, you know, and be safe? Either, you know, somebody is either going to run screaming away or say, oh, all right, you know. And so God kind of took all that out of my hands, and we met elsewhere in a faith-based event and began talking, and then it came out that we were both sexaholics and we were both sober. We courted for 6 years and remained sober, and I still to this day am amazed by that and very grateful to SA and, more importantly, my higher power. And now I have tools and I have a relationship and have intimacy that I only dreamed of in the past, and I really didn't think that it was possible for me. I still have a lot of growing to do. I have tremendous respect for my husband and his program as well as his faith, and he is a leader to me. However, I play for an audience of one, and my sobriety is my responsibility. My relationship with God is my responsibility. And I realize that he and I have a very priceless, fragile gift, and I'm very thankful for it, and I want to protect it. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Libby. I'm from Asheville, North Carolina. I'm a grateful member of Essanon. I didn't hear everything. I came in the middle of the first lead, but I did hear, and I was really glad to hear this idea of how important it is that I work my own program. And I had to spend a lot of time doing that before I could even look at the couple. And I would say it was well over 6 months, probably more like a year to a year and a half, before I was ready to really step up and start looking at looking and focusing on the couple. And I think that's something that I pass on to a lot of people, and it's not something that a lot of people want to hear. But it is. I think it has been true for me, and I am really glad to hear that it's been true for other people as well. The other thing that comes up for me around this topic of intimacy is that in order to be intimate, I have to be vulnerable. And that is not something I was ever safe in my household. There was way too much judgment. You know, that's what I grew up with, was being judged. And I brought that skill set into my into my adult life, is to be judgmental and with my spouse as well as others. And one of the things that came to me through, you know, a miracle was, I don't know how long we'd been in recovery, but I needed to talk to my spouse about something. And I knew that it was, you know, something that we had hashed over before. You know, I'm going to say this, he's going to say this, I'm going to say this, he's going to say this, and then we run into the brick wall. You know, we just don't get any further. And this idea came to me, and I asked him, we were out on a walk, and I said, I need to talk to you about something. Would you please treat this like a meeting? And he knew what that meant. It means you got to be quiet and listen. And but what I got out of that was that I felt heard, and I had to listen. I didn't expect that part. That was the surprise part, was that I had to listen then. But I was able to hear him. We were able to really hear each other. And I think it was just one of these masterful tools that came to me. Thanks. And now, after 10 odd years, I don't need to do that anymore. We just do it naturally. We're able to have fun together and do things. And there have been enlightenments and shifts all along the way. It's not like it just happens once. The miracle continues to happen. So keep hanging in there.
Hi, my name is Jim.
Hi, Jim.
I'm glad to be here. What I remember is our pre-recovery dance was, I did not want to let anybody into me at all, and Libby wanted to totally invade and have this totally enmeshed thing going on. And so we were really kind of two ends of the spectrum, and it was a really difficult dance, you know, that we the expectations that each of us had continued to increase this power struggle over and over and over. And we would fight about it. It was just really an unpleasant and difficult situation. And it's so different now. I have to echo that it's about both of us having worked the steps. It's about both of us having sponsors so that we have somebody else to talk about with. You know, a lot of those conversations that we just had to have with each other, we don't have to have with each other now. We have totally different people. And it looks into how we're taking care of the relationship rather than taking care of my own neediness. Somehow gradually, as we got healthier, I became less, I had less need to keep her out, you know, and she had less need to you know, invade too. And that dance has just kind of moved towards balance over time. And, you know, it's got to be a higher power thing. I don't really understand it. And we didn't set out to do that. You know, we set out to put the fire out and to get sober and to stop the pain. But that just has kind of come along the line. And just pitch, I guess, for tomorrow morning's couples meeting is that in using the traditions in our relationship, that's one of the ways that we have those guidelines and those handrails and those boundaries so that we don't create unsafe situations for each other. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. Hi, I'm Laura.
Hi, Laura.
I'm so thankful for this topic because I feel like my husband and I have been married 17 years. We just celebrated our anniversary, and my way of getting intimacy was I would fix up these romantic plans. Let's go out to dinner. Let's take ourselves for a little vacation. Let's do this. And I would always get so frustrated because we would do this thing, and I'm like, well, this is supposed to work, isn't it? We love each other. We're on a date. We're going to have a good time. Well, for some reason or another, my husband over here would be being very hostile, like subtly hostile to me. And I would go, well, there he goes again. He's ruining it. It's not working. And then I would jump over here, and he'd be over here. And, oh, that feels good. That's exactly what I grew up with. That must be the right thing to do. Well, I had a very bad fall this year, and I finally went and talked to someone. I'm like, this is not working. He's doing this, blah, 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 blah. And the person said to me, well, have you ever said to him when he's critical of you, honey, can I give you a hug? Or when it wasn't working out, maybe that's not what you meant to say to me. Or really, I love you. And I was like, that's not going to work. You got to be joking. So I went home, I tried it out, and you know what? It did work. Because I finally realized that not only he had to stay close to me, but I had to stay close to him, and I'm like, oh, that's scary. This is hard. And I'm like, but I'm not supposed to be the one that this is hard for, and I am the one it was hard for. And I'll say one quick more other thing is I love the title of this conference. I'm going to clip out the little thing and put it on my mirror in the bathroom. I checked to make sure it didn't have SNN or SA on it in case somebody walks in and sees it. But but the one thing that makes me feel good was intimacy comes a lot better when my husband and I are enjoying life and looking at the fun side of life instead of how we can get back into that fighting place. So thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Soren. I'm a gratefully recovering member of SA. One of the things that I realized in this last fall was that I would look at every little thing that my wife did and view it as an offense. And so it would be, you know, leaving a pot off a dish while it's boiling, leaving a lid off a pot while it's boiling. I'm just slowly moving away from her and just use that as an example of ways to go away from her. And what she described was a good process for moving back together again. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you all to everyone who came up and shared their experience, strength, and hope. We all need to hear it on an ongoing basis as we need our meetings. For those of you who are local to Nashville or, you know, within driving distance, the couples meeting here, Couples in Recovery for SAS Anon, is on the second and fourth Saturdays of the month at the Woodmont Hills Church of Christ. If you have any questions about the meeting, if you are interested at all in it, Scott and myself attend that meeting regularly. There are several other regular attendees here as well. We need participation. What you got from hearing today, the speakers, is what we can give each other on an ongoing basis. And we, Scott and I, that's one of the ways that we stay connected and that we stay intimate, is by committing to going to that couples meeting. So we would really love for you to come. This is an anonymous program. We ask all who are present respect our anonymity. The stories you hear are told in confidence and should not be repeated outside. They are told so we might better understand the program and ourselves, and to give encouragement and help to the newcomer so we may keep what we have been given. I've asked Catherine to come up and read the gifts of the program. I want you to particularly listen for "We Will Recover the Feeling of Joy," because that is what the conference is about. Thank you very much. The last person who shared mentioned that. We, through working, that is one of the gifts that we have received as a couple, is the feeling of joy and being able to enjoy each other. So I wish that for all of you.
Hello, I'm Catherine.
Catherine.
The gifts of the Essanon program. When we approach the process of recovery with honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness to apply the principles of the 12 steps to our lives, we will soon begin to see the rewards. We will become able to surrender our self-defeating behavior. We will find that we have the strength and insight to make good choices for ourselves. Our ability to act positively on behalf of our health, families, jobs, and bank accounts will amaze us. We will find that others are doing things for themselves which we thought we had to do for them. Our ability to give and receive love will expand tremendously, and we will become increasingly available for loving relationships with others. We will recover the feeling of joy. We will become more honest with ourselves and experience a new comfort in our intimate relationships. We will feel the security that arises from true fellowship with others in the program, knowing that we are loved and accepted just as we are. Feelings of failure and inadequacy will be replaced by self-confidence and independence of spirit. We will no longer expect other people to provide us with an identity or a sense of self-worth. We will find the courage to be true to ourselves. We will know peace of mind and feel a stronger connection with a higher power of our understanding, and our hope will turn to faith that God is really working in our lives as we explore the wonders of serenity, dignity, and emotional growth.
Thanks.
Before we leave, if we could just end with a closing prayer. We'll end with the Lord's Prayer today. Who's Father?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming back. It works if you work it, and work it because you're worth it.
Thank you. You can't be subtle with me. I wasn't even looking at you. I wasn't even listening. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Like 3 to 6 couples at a meeting. So we're just, since we figured there's probably 50 couples here in the national area here today, we just want to let people know that the couples meeting is available and that there's hope and strength for
a little fire for us being in Illinois. We're trying to get one going in Peoria. Two couples, three couples.
Well, I mean, Nashville is the...
And it seems like everyone wants one thing. But to get couples together...
But that's the reason we only do it twice a month. And maybe you can start once a month.
Okay, I'm just one idea. I know the start
part. You said Illinois?
Yeah, what part of Illinois? Central.
My father was raised, and all his family, like, Moosehart.
You heard of it? Because it's an orphanage that you were raised in.
I mean, I found this after.
Because he
told my mother, and my mother told my brother, that's my father's son, sexual assault.
We never worry.
But his whole family is from North Central Illinois.
Hinkley, I mean, it's a little bit smaller than that, but I mean, I've still got cousins all over there. I couldn't tell you what city it's in.
Trying to get through?
But I'm trying to find, you know, I tell somebody earlier today, you know, I'm just curious how many different states are represented here today. No, I just know it's the biggest one ever. Somebody told me. Yeah, that's the only thing I know for sure. Yeah, he's amazing. Good luck with getting it going.
Yeah, I mean, that's all you can do.
When we were first introduced to a couple, then we were having kind of an essay.
Well, that's what ours
was. Wasn't many. And then we heard about...
Okay. Well, we live in Louisville in 3 hours, but it's doable for us. We're going from Eastern to Central time. And now we're just going to
Yeah, well,
it would be about 3 hours, so I thought we might make
that much.
I'm
really
okay.
You know, something else, too, I always talk about, and I've told My wife and I, when we first got, 5.5 years ago, we first got it. I got individual therapy. She got individual therapy. We went to her therapist for a couple. Her therapist never had a second essay. I wasn't her first, but the other guy was like one time he quit. So I, you know, she had no idea how to deal with an essay, which is different, as we know, than any, maybe any other addiction that there is.
I don't know how to.
spreading the word is all you can do, right? Well, good luck. God bless you. You guys drive down here?
Yeah. Yeah, we came down last Sunday.
Oh, okay.
Spent the week. Yeah, we always try to the convention, make it a part of our vacation. We either start the vacation with the convention.